surreal Sabbath. Palm trees, shrubs, rice paddies, and man-made structures dashed 100 feet beneath us in a blur. As we banked out over the winding, muddy waters of the Da Nang River, our shadows passed over perplexed, startled, upward-looking faces from sampans, klong houses, and floating markets. This wasn't some trendy helicopter Southeast Asian eco-tour. It was my 23rd daytime combat assault mission, and we are the 118th Assault Helicopter Company, also known as the Bandits Platoon. I was a UH-1C Huey gunship helicopter left door gunner with an M60 machine gun lying heavily on my lap. I was in the number two ship of a three-ship heavily armed and overloaded Huey helicopter gunship convoy lumbering into the Sunday morning sky out over Benoit, Vietnam. We were headed to a rendezvous point about 50 clicks to the southeast to escort a dozen Huey troop-carrying helicopters, or SLICs, to an LZ. So that meant I have about 30 minutes of flight time to take care of gunnery duties, watch out for hostile fire, and enjoy the unfolding drama below. We flew NOE, or a nap of the earth, or just above the treetops and sometimes between them this morning at about 90 miles an hour, since it was harder for the enemy to shoot us down at high speed. Plus, it was so much more fun. And sometimes I would look for the beauty or mystery of Nam. So as we banked out over the mystique of the sinuous Da Nang River, leaving behind us flying toward the rising sun, it felt as if we had entered what seemed like another world or a parallel universe, shrouded by taboo and the dragon's breath below. The ground fog was one more thing that obscured Charlie, who lived down there, and who wanted to keep it that way. The true knowledge of awesomeness, fear, love, and uncertainty was everywhere. I also felt fragility and lethality at the same time. We could be knocked out of the sky with some well-placed VC anti-aircraft fire, and at the same time, we had enough ordnance to completely kill and obliterate three city blocks. During times like this, flying over the jungle, I would switch from warrior to one who admires, absorbs, and imbibes the wonders of this Asian paradise caught in a state of unstable flux. Up ahead, I saw the bright orange terracotta roofs of an opulent French rubber plantation. Its clean, well-maintained grounds accentuated the cultural contrast in another conquered symbol from the past. The bright blue swimming pool persistently showed off its majesty in the face of a war-torn nation. It was our American oversexed, overpowered, and over-here hedonistic eyes, though, that plied the pool's edge for the occasional beautiful, scantily clad French-Vietnamese woman of Da Nang, sunbathing on the pool edge. We left the plantation mansion behind, and up ahead, the jungle opened up into a square-mile series of rice paddies. On the south edge lay an apparent peaceful and pastoral village. In it, families were going about their agrarian lifestyle as they have for perhaps hundreds or even thousands of years. A water buffalo pulled a plow led by a young Vietnamese boy son in soiled khaki shorts and white shirts. As we approached, snowy egrets elegantly took to the wing in apparent slow motion to escape the menacing noise of our helicopter and the threat of us. All is friendly here until nightfall, when Charlie and the NVA seethed into the shadows and took back its turf in the minds of the simple people trying to scratch out an existence. Soon, Buddha Mountain proudly thrusted upward from the surrounding flat, lush green and brown landscape below. Our three-ship gunship helicopters in trail formation flew alongside the rocky escarpment that had been shrouded in mysticism and wonder until the last decade when this most recent war kicked off. As we traveled further, we saw a Buddhist temple precariously poised on a rocky escarpment precipice. Mosaic dragons decorating its pillars seemed to beckon, "Come no closer." The bright reds, yellows, and blues of the temple, Buddha statues, monk robes, and prayer flags were a striking contrast to the greens and browns of most of Vietnam. Exotic plants clung to the rocky escarpments, while long vines dangled for 100 feet or more, disappearing into the dragon's breath below, covering the jungle floor. In moments like this, I imagine we were in a National Geographic travelogue, sent to explore the unknown spiritual treasures and vistas of Southeast Asia. The serene experience was soon interrupted by the crackle of the VHF radio wired into my flight helmet. Being immediately drawn back into the military Indochina reality from my surreal inner reality, I paid attention to the succinct monotone of Major Moody, the CO, and today's flight leader of the 190th Raiders. It was hard, though, since I always had to fight back a smirk when I heard the name Major Moody. The Moody Blues had recently stormed the music world with their psychedelic music of the late 60s. To add to the hilarity, the Raiders icon, or nose art, emblazoned on the aircraft was Yosemite Sam, with both pistols drawn and wild-eyed look of bring 'em on, partner. This major had his own moods, and they weren't serenading blues. It was more of a 1-2 punch to Charlie's gut. How does one transition their mind amidst all this? How does one go from a peaceful American civilization just 2 years ago to an unwilling soldier not only being comfortable in a war-torn country, to actually desiring it? How does one become at ease with the possibility that a misstep could lead to loss of limb, or a integral part of the chopper falling off and resulting in all on board plummeting to the earth like a mortally wounded bird? The choices appear clear. After a while, become captivated in fear 24/7, or embrace it. Some would live in a bottle, high, or absorbed in a sense of security religion plays. Others were just tough guys that thumbed their noses at death. I wasn't one of those. I suppose it was different with everyone. With flight crews, pilots, door gunners, and CIA observers that we took up, there was a commonality, a need to fly and maintain the high ground below us. Meanwhile, the Vietnamese struggled in their mute nostril agony, as the doors might have said. We, on the other hand, experienced America's first rock and roll war.